Welcome and thank you all for standing by. At this time, I would like to remind parties that your lines are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session, at which time you may press star one to ask a question. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn the meeting over to Glenn Nowak. Thank you, sir. You may begin.
Thank you, and thank you all for coming or calling in today for this press briefing on H1N1. Today's speaker is going to be Dr. Ann Schuchat. She's director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And Dr. Schuchat will be giving you an update on both the disease activity in the country as well as vaccine supply. So I will turn the podium over to Dr. Ann Schuchat.
Thanks, Glenn, and good afternoon. The pace of our progress is picking up. Today, we have twice as much vaccine available as we had 2 weeks ago. I'm going to touch on three areas, an update on the flu itself, the disease, a brief update on the vaccine supply situation, and then talk in more detail about our vaccination efforts. Flu is still widespread. 48 states have widespread influenza activity, and virtually everything that we're seeing is the 2009 H1N1 virus. The rates of disease that we're seeing are much higher than normal for this time of year. We wouldn't expect this many states to have widespread disease. And I want to remind people that flu season can last until May, so we really don't know exactly what trajectory we'll see with this virus or with the flu season in general. Most of the illness that we're seeing is in younger people. More than half of the hospitalizations and are in people under 25, and 90% of the deaths are in people under 65, a flip-flop from what we see with seasonal flu. The pediatric deaths, unfortunately, do continue to grow. This week, we're reporting a total of 129 children have died from the H1N1 virus. There are others, children who have died from flu where the typing wasn't done, but that's an increase from last week's number. Two-thirds of the children who died from the H1N1 virus have underlying conditions that increase their risk of this problem. The leading underlying conditions in children who have died are severe neurologic problems like cerebral palsy and muscular dystrophy, and the second category is asthma in terms of contributing to these severe outcomes. Fortunately, antivirals are very effective treatment against flu, including those flu complications. And we have updated information on our website for clinicians about some of the myths and misconceptions about antivirals. We really are seeing a better supply horizon out in the community, and we do think that antivirals ought to be used when there's a severe presentation of illness, like anyone who's hospitalized, and in people who have respiratory symptoms with underlying conditions like pregnancy or asthma. Also, if people are getting worse, they're not getting better, they're continuing to get worse, then antivirals may be very important. The next thing I want to catch people up about is the vaccine effort. As I said, today we have about twice the vaccine available that we had 2 weeks ago. Today there are 38 million doses of H1N1 vaccine available for ordering by the state. The majority of this is in injectable doses, and about a third of it is the spray form that, of course, is recommended for people who are healthy between the ages of 2 and 49 years of age. Today's number is up about, it's actually up more than 11 million doses from last Friday's amount, and so that is progress. If all goes well, we're expecting about 8 million doses to be available in the week ahead. And, of course, that's if everything goes well. As vaccine supplies increase, we think that things should go better. We still don't have enough vaccine. We know that communities are seeing lots of demand, and the supply hasn't caught up with that. Many places do need more, but we think we're towards a path of improvement at this point. State and local health departments are going to be in the best position to determine how to effectively use and direct the vaccine doses that become available. The key right now is focusing those vaccine doses for the priority groups, children and young adults up through age 24, pregnant women, parents or other caretakers of babies under 6 months of age, adults 25 to 64 years of age with chronic health conditions and healthcare workers or emergency medical service personnel. Those five groups are key, and they're really the focus area for the states and locals and for the providers who are offering vaccine around the country. Our goal really is to put vaccine in the path of people who are in those priority groups to make it as easy as possible for these groups to be vaccinated and to really support the state and local health departments that are managing the effort. We know that vaccine is being offered in a variety of venues with a variety of strategies, and that our goal is really to have vaccine accessible for people in these priority groups at this point. I want to mention one really nice effort that we've heard about in the Champaign-Urbana Public Health Department in Illinois. They've really created a nice partnership between the Public Health Department, the private providers, and the state special services program, where children who have special needs have had an easier way to be vaccinated through the Public Health Department clinic, where when parents bring these kids with the special needs in, they don't even have to get out of the car. A nurse comes out and is able to vaccinate them right in the car. It's been an innovative program that's reaching some of these very high-risk, vulnerable children, and I just want to congratulate the Champaign-Urbana area for coming up with this partnership. In closing, I just want to remind folks that progress is being made, but we need to extend that in the weeks ahead. The priority groups are the focus of our activities in the next several weeks. We're expecting variation state to state, community to community, in finding the best ways to reach these high-priority populations. And we know that the state and local health departments and their partners in healthcare delivery are working very hard to reach these groups. It's really important for every available dose to be used as quickly and effectively as possible. As doses do increase, this will become more and more of a challenge. We're going to continue to have challenges. We aren't at the supply scenario that we'd like to be today, though we're much better than we were a couple weeks ago. And a reminder that there's much you can do before you are able to be vaccinated or your children are able to be vaccinated. Staying home when you're sick or keeping your children home when they're sick, covering your cough or sneeze, washing your hands, staying informed, finding out about the warning signs to watch for and when to call your health care provider, and there's a lot of really good information at flu.gov. So let's go to questions, and I think we'll start in the room. Maybe we can start over here. Okay. I'm looking for the microphone.
Hi, thank you very much. I'm Michelle Merrill with Hospital Employee Health Newsletter. I spoke to someone at a major New Jersey medical center yesterday. They still had received zero H1N1 vaccine, and many hospitals have received a small portion of their order, maybe 10%. And we did have a report that corporations have been getting vaccine. So I'm wondering, why are hospitals not the absolute highest priority? Obviously, they have at-risk patients as well as healthcare workers. And does CDC have any plans to take more of an active role in determining who gets the first doses of the vaccine? And as a secondary question, I understand many hospitals have not received their complete seasonal flu vaccine order, and I think that's not being produced right now because of the push to get H1N1. Will they eventually be getting that vaccine?
Thanks. The state and city health departments are doing an incredible job directing vaccine to places that can reach high-priority populations. In our survey of the states, what we understand is that hospitals were very highly prioritized by the majority of states. That doesn't mean that hospitals got everything that they ordered because the initial amounts have been relatively small, but we know that hospitals that were able to reach healthcare workers and some of the high-priority groups of vulnerable adults and kids were very heavily targeted. But we know that there are a variety of places that you can reach people who are at risk, and we think that doctors' offices, health departments, schools, hospitals, employee clinics that can reach priority populations are all reasonable places for vaccine to go. The key thing is to be able to vaccinate as many people in these priority groups as effectively as possible, and sometimes just focusing on putting the vaccine in the path of where people will be is really the strategy. So we work very closely with the states in support of their efforts and have been emphasizing the importance of the priority populations. You asked about the seasonal flu, and I forgot to update you on that. There are 91 million doses of seasonal flu vaccine that have been shipped out so far. Of course, this is a private sector enterprise. The public health system is very minimally involved in seasonal flu, but 91 million doses so far. Manufacturers have estimated that up to 114 million doses of seasonal flu vaccine may be produced this year. Exactly the timetable for getting the additional doses, I don't know, but we have seen increased doses coming out each week, 91 million as of this past this latest update. We are reminding people that the seasonal flu can occur and that it's important to be vaccinated. We think there's time. Usually seasonal flu strains don't increase until December through May, and so right now everything we're seeing is the H1N1 virus. So hopefully there will be additional supplies, but they may not be ample in terms of the seasonal flu vaccine. They may not be ample to reach the tremendous demand that we're seeing this year. So I think we can do another from the room. I can't see the microphone, but yeah, okay.
Dr. Jennifer Ashton, CBS. Mm-hmm. There have been some isolated reported cases out of Pittsburgh of pediatric H1N1 with the complication of encephalitis, and I know the CDC did report this as a complication in July as well. What are you seeing in terms of encephalitis with pediatric H1N1 cases, and is this an emerging trend?
Thanks for that question. We did facilitate a report of neurologic problems last spring and are hearing these reports now. I don't have updated information about how widespread that syndrome is. It's been recognized with seasonal flu that some people can develop a neurologic problem, an encephalitis, and, of course, that's a worrisome syndrome to get, but it's something that we can look into further. Let's do another from the room.
Thanks, Dr. Mike Stobie from the AP. Two questions. You said swine flu is widespread in 48 states. That's the same number as last week. Do you think it's leveling off or peaking? And I also wanted to ask you about the Harvard poll that came out this morning, specifically the finding that half of the people surveyed said they didn't know where to go to get swine flu vaccine. Could you comment on that, too?
Sure. We're seeing substantial disease, as I said, widespread disease in 48 states. Influenza-like illness that's presenting to doctors' offices is at about the same level this week as it was the week before. It's at 7.7% of doctors' visits that are for flu-like illness, and it was about 8% last week. That's still way higher than we would see at this time of year, even though we had a slight downtick in that statistic. I can't say exactly what's going to happen in the weeks ahead. Certainly, even at the point where there's a peak of disease in any one community, half of the cases are still to come. What we have seen in seasonal flu is that after the milder illness, the outpatient illness peaks, once one has a delay before hospitalizations peak and a further delay before deaths peak. So I don't think we're at peak at this point in the nation as a whole, but what I can say is that disease continues to occur at very high levels right now. The other thing to mention is that in pandemics in the past, it's been tricky to predict too far ahead. In 1957, there was a substantial amount of disease in the fall, and people thought, you know, pretty much gave the all clear sign. And then after the first of the year, there was a big increase in severe disease. So really another wave in 58. And so we are very mindful that there's a long flu season ahead and that we're going to be attentive to the needs of the population, to the efforts to try to protect people going forward. The second question you had was about the Harvard poll, and we have seen those data. I think that it's understandable that people were finding it difficult to find vaccine at the time of the poll because we were, and still are, at a point where the supply is relatively limited compared with the demand. I think a really nice result of that poll was that we learned that 9 out of 10 people who had looked for vaccine and not been able to get it planned to try again. They weren't giving up. They weren't so frustrated that they'd had it. They recognized the value of trying to protect themselves with vaccine and sticking with it through the next several weeks. So I'm very mindful of the frustration people have had, whether it's from information gaps or from just the basic availability of vaccine. But I think that should be getting better over the weeks ahead. So a question from the phone.
If you'd like to ask a question over the phone, you may press *1. And our first question is from Janelle Alicia, MSNBC.com. Your line is open.
Hi, Dr. Shukat. Thanks for taking the call. I have a question today about Paramivir and the IV antivirals. I know that HHS yesterday authorized an increased purchase of these drugs, and I was just wondering if you could tell me, with Paramivir in particular, what level of demand you've seen from doctors wanting this treatment for the most ill patients, and whether you expect that demand to rise, and whether you expect that there will be enough of that, of the oral antivirals. Thanks.
Paramivir is the first intravenous antiviral that has received an emergency use authorization from the FDA. And we are providing that to clinicians who request it. The indication is for a severely ill person who cannot tolerate other routes of administration, where the intravenous route is preferred or necessary. We do know that there are other intravenous antiviral medicines under review, and it would maybe that we'll get additional products in the foreseeable future. At this point, we are seeing demand for that product from critical care healthcare personnel to care for their patients. We've had more than 300 requests for Paramivir through our system so far. We believe that our supply will be fine given the recent order of products, and that we will not have to have an interruption in supply based on the next amounts of product that are expected to be coming. Okay, another from the phone.
John Cohen, Science Magazine, your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The letter that Dr. Frieden sent out yesterday, could you give us some specifics about what triggered that? If it indeed was the fact that corporations were receiving the vaccine, was there any evidence that they were using the vaccine in low-risk groups? And if so, which corporations and what happened?
We have no evidence that providers were giving vaccine to people outside the recommended priority populations, but we were aware of concerns and reports. And Dr. Frieden's letter was sent out to the health officers really as a reminder to emphasize how important it is at this time, where supply is relatively limited, that we focus on the best ways to reach the populations that have been targeted for vaccine. Next question from the phone.
Miriam Falco, your line from CNN Medical News. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking the question. It's kind of a follow-up to the corporation question. Some folks think that the CDC may have been able to do a better job of communicating that corporations are also a place to get vaccinated and get the vaccine to high-risk groups, although the guidelines you put out for businesses do say that. Whose job is it? Is it the state and local health departments to more clearly tell their folks that this is what we decide, or do you think, looking forward, that the CDC may need to do more to communicate that information better?
There are a variety of places where vaccination can reach high-priority populations. We think that the state and local health departments are in the best position. They know their communities, they know their population, they know their providers, they know the capacity of the care system. And what we're seeing state to state and city to city is a variation. A lot of vaccine going to hospitals for healthcare workers, a lot of vaccine going to health departments, some to managed care organizations who know who their high-risk populations are and can reach them, vaccine in many states going for school-located clinics that are reaching a large number of young people who don't have that many doctor's visits, and it may be difficult for parents to get them to the health department. We're also seeing vaccine going to employer-based occupational clinics. When you look at adults and where they get vaccinated with seasonal flu vaccine, it turns out that the workplace is a very common place for adults to be vaccinated. It's convenient. It's accessible. So I think there is nothing wrong with an employer-based occupational health clinic getting vaccine to reach priority populations. And our focus right now is helping the states and locals really reach those priority populations. Pregnant women, of course, are in the workforce. Adults with health conditions like asthma, diabetes, we recommend vaccine for that group. Parents of children under 6 months or other caretakers of children under 6 months. I think there are many different ways where those priority adult populations can be reached, and we really want to support the states and locals in getting vaccine as efficiently and effectively as possible out to them. Next question from the phone.
Brian Hartman, ABC, your line is open.
Yeah, hi, Doctor. Could you go into some detail on the status of production, whether there are any new glitches or the old ones all still resolved? And could you give me sort of a best case, worst case scenario of when you think that's going to feel to the public like there's plenty of vaccine out there and they don't have to worry about waiting in line and searching around for it? Thanks.
Right. I'm not aware of new glitches in vaccine production. As people have heard by now, the vaccine strain has been slow growing, and the manufacturers have had a challenge in getting a yields that were reliably producing batches week to week that met their earlier predictions. There's been intense outreach between the Department of Health and Human Services and the manufacturers, really trying to get the best information. I know that our secretary has reached out to the manufacturers to make sure that we know what's going on and that we're able to help where it's possible. So I'm not aware of new problems. Looking forward, it's extremely difficult to predict when things are going to feel easier in any one community. And I just want to go through a couple things with this because I've been asked that quite often recently. The supply is increasing. As I said, we have twice as much vaccine today as we had 2 weeks ago. It may not feel like that wherever you are. The demand for influenza vaccine, H1N1 and seasonal flu vaccine, is quite high right now. This could change area to area. It can change week to week. And so when we get to that sweet spot where there's ample vaccine and demand can be met easily, it's hard to predict. I'm expecting that in the next several weeks, things will get better and better, but we've all been a little burned on predictions, so I'm not going to get more specific than that. Next question from the room. Is there one in the room? Okay. Right. Sure. Uh-huh.
Sorry, I just want to follow up from that earlier question about the poll survey that found that half of Americans didn't know where to go. What do we draw from that? Are some health departments not being very aggressive because of the limited supplies and getting the word out of where to go? Also, I have one more question. Have we learned any lessons from Europe, which some say some European countries have been much more efficient and effective about finding the people who are prioritized, getting them specifically in for appointments? Anything, any lessons learned or things we can copy from Europe?
Right. I think it's not surprising that many people didn't know where to get vaccine because I think the first few weeks of this program, vaccine has been in very limited supply. And in some states, vaccine was being sent out to providers' offices so patients could get it through their doctor, but that wasn't being publicly advertised. In many places, the health departments were directing the vaccine for school-located clinics. They were really focusing on children, and there wasn't that much product that was actually being offered to the general population, either to doctors and healthcare workers or to schools. And so there, the other people who had priority conditions weren't necessarily able to find vaccine. There are a number of states that have held mass clinics that were accessible to the community at large. Many, many states have vaccine in the local health departments who are offering it either through mass clinics or through appointments. And then, of course, the hospitals have gotten vaccine that they can share. I think the principle, though, is that when you have limited supply, advertising is difficult because you don't have enough. You don't want to frustrate the demand. What I can say is we've all learned how important communication is and that even if there aren't public clinics this week, the health departments have really been trying to get the planning going forward settled so that people would be able to look at the website at flu.gov and the flu locator and learn, okay, there's nothing in my community this week, but 2 weeks from now I can go to this community center and get it, or 3 weeks from now perhaps that pharmacy will have it. So I think we've been in a challenging information environment. In terms of Europe, it sounds promising. I'll probably want to talk with you later about which countries you're speaking of. I can say there are a number of states that have done a great job of working with their priority populations to find them. You know, some states have immunization information registries and can figure out, you know, where things are with that. I know some of the health plans or the Indian Health Service, I believe, are using their information systems to identify, okay, let's make sure we have a handle on our people with asthma, our people with other conditions, and that we know how to reach them and let them know that they should come in for vaccine. I think information systems are really, really in the future going to be a very good way for us to make sure we reach priority groups and also innovative communication efforts. We have been working with the faith-based organizations, community-based groups, as well as a lot of the provider organizations, to find best ways to reach people that might not be watching TV or reading the newspaper for these announcements. Okay, so a question from the phone.
Steve Sternberg, USA Today, your line is open.
Thanks, Dr. Shuket. Two quick questions. One is, do you have any idea about how many doses of vaccine have been delivered up to this, I mean, actually administered up to this point? And my second question is, there are a lot of folks who've gotten flu-like illness with high fevers and the, you know, the characteristics of flu, but haven't been tested. And I get a lot of questions about whether those folks should be vaccinated anyway.
Yeah. We don't have great estimates yet about how many people have been vaccinated. We are carrying out some coverage surveys that are done by telephone to track at a national level and then state by state the percent of the population that has received the H1N1 vaccine. The information we've gotten so far is really the baseline, the sort of before there was much vaccine at all out there, very, very low levels. And what we're expecting in the weeks ahead is to be able to report to you these figures as we get them. The second question was about people who have believed they probably have had the H1N1 infection. They've had fever and cough, but they didn't get tested. Should they get the vaccine? We do recommend it. The vast majority of people would not know for sure that they had this strain, the 2009 H1N1 virus. There's not that much testing capacity for us to know that, and we don't think there's any harm in getting vaccinated even if you've already had the infection. Many things that look like influenza or the H1N1 influenza are something else, and so for the time being, our recommendation is to go ahead, if you're in a priority group, and seek out the vaccine when it's available in your community. Another question from the phone?
Jonathan Seri, Fox News, your line is open.
Thank you, Dr. Shuket. We know up to this point the H1N1 virus has shown no signs of mutation, but could you quantify the risk of this happening some point in the future? Is this an unlikely scenario that you still have to prepare for, or is it something you expect will eventually happen with this particular virus?
Well, influenza viruses change. That's pretty inevitable, and so mutations will occur. I think the key part of your question is, will we see something in the near future that would make the clinical pattern of this virus change markedly to something much more severe than what we're seeing, or is there some kind of change that would occur that would lead the virus to escape the vaccine-induced protection? Both of those kinds of changes are possible. Fortunately, we haven't seen any of those yet. We've been testing a lot of viruses, and the virulence of the virus hasn't changed genetically, and neither has the immune characteristics. The vaccines that we're making available now appear to be very good matches with the virus. It has been seen with pandemics in the past that over the couple years after a new strain emerges, it starts to change a bit. It starts to drift and become something that would need a change in vaccine formulation. So that's one of the reasons we make up new vaccines every year for seasonal flu, is the viruses may change year to year, and we may need to modify the vaccine. Okay, another question from the phone?
Betsy McKay, Wall Street Journal, your line is open.
Hi, Dr. Shuket, thanks. One of my questions was answered, but I wanted to ask you about the number of doses being delivered in the coming week. If I heard you correctly, I think you said that 8 million are expected in the next week or the next weeks. In the past 2 weeks, there were 10 million or more new doses, so I just wondered if you could talk about why the slowdown, if that is a slowdown. And secondly, I wonder if you have any more detail on formulations that are currently available. I know you talked about injectable versus nasal spray. Do you know how much of injectable is in multi-dose vials, how many single-dose vials, how many pediatric formulations? Do you have that information available?
I don't have the specific details of the formulations. As you mentioned, there are several. There's pediatric single-dose syringes. There's adult single-dose syringes. There's the mist formulation. There's multi-dose vials. There are multiple companies. So I actually don't have that. I can say the majority is injectable now and not the mist anymore, and that I believe the majority of the injectable is the multi-dose vials, but there are single-dose syringes for children and adults as well available. The other question you asked was about whether we should read anything into expecting 8 million doses of vaccine this next week and having gotten about 11 million this week and about 10 million, I think, the week before. I wouldn't read anything into that. What basically is happening is that batches of influenza vaccine are being prepared and produced, and the batches have to be ready. And it's not something where week by week you can directly compare. We are expecting, if everything goes well, that we'll have another 8 million doses this week. And going forward, we will be getting more information about what to expect. But I don't think that there's anything to be read into an 8 million expectation for next week versus 11 million for this past week, based on everything that I know. Okay, time for two more questions from the phone.
Daniel Danoon, WebMD, your line is open.
Thank you very much. Dr. Shook, I'd like to follow up on Betsy's question. So we've seen like about 10 million this week and about 8 million next week. Can we say that the flow is about 8 to 10 million a week, and is that the flow we are expecting, or will the flow vary markedly from week to week? I'm just not quite clear what the flow looks like.
I think that we've been trying to stay away from getting too far ahead of the flow because we were perhaps wrong in the past when we did that. But I think that I'm not actually aware of exactly what happens after the 8 million that we're expecting this next week. That's what I can say. Did you have a second question? Or that was... Okay, so next, I guess the last question from the phone.
The next is from Lorna Benson, MN Public Radio. Your line is open.
Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Shookit. Some of the estimates we've heard suggest that these waves of illness can last from 6 to 12 weeks. And here in Minnesota, we saw a jump in illness approximately 10 weeks ago. What are your calculations in terms of how long this wave has been going on? And is the wave duration similar to what they saw in the southern hemisphere during their winter flu season?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've actually been talking about that internally, trying to look community to community at how long things are lasting and whether we can predict a little further ahead. But what we're seeing is different in different communities. And, you know, as we said, some of the southeastern states had rises as early as August and quite a lot of disease in September and into October. A number of those states are seeing drops now, but they're not at all down to baseline. They're still very elevated. So ability to say how long do one of these waves last is tricky. We've seen, you know, parts of a city and then another part of the city. So I wish I could tell folks in your community what to expect, but it's very difficult to. So thanks, everybody, and I think Tuesday we'll be on again, or somebody will be out here on Tuesday. Okay.